When it comes to mental health awareness, most everyone has a story.
It's a personal issue for me. I have a sister who's been diagnosed with schizophrenia, paranoid, and at the time of her diagnosis, I don't think my family and I realized exactly how to deal with it.
Tonight on the Public Radio Hour, we're looking back at our year-long coverage of mental health awareness in our community. We'll hear stories from military veterans.
The individual suffering does not think that they are unique and going through this problem by themselves, that others have it and others go through it.
And we'll hear from people who've suffered great loss from not knowing what to do.
You deal with it and don't talk about it, and it doesn't work like that. I even had that mindset too. It cost my son his life.
Stories of mental health awareness on the Public Radio Hour, next here on 89.3 Huntsville. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville. Tonight, we're reviewing some of the stories and interviews that we produced as part of our year-long coverage and exploration of mental health awareness issues in our community. Later in the show, we'll hear from Little Orange Fish, who hosted a unique storytelling event aimed at raising mental health awareness. We'll also hear from Wendy Galloway, who lost her son Aaron to suicide. And Kathy Main with our community newsroom visited a mental health public forum at the Huntsville-Madison County Public Library. We'll hear a couple of stories from there as well. But let's start tonight with a focus on our military veterans. The Wall That Heals, a three-quarter replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall, paid a visit to Huntsville back in November, and it was a big draw to many of those in our community. We spoke with some of the organizers of the event about how remembering and talking with those who have shared a common experience can help heal mental and emotional wounds. Our episode starts tonight amid the gleaming marble slabs and cascading waterfalls at the Veterans Memorial in downtown Huntsville.
My name is Charlie Miller. I'm the president of Chapter 1067, the Vietnam chapter here in Huntsville, the largest chapter in the state of Alabama. And my connection with the wall is that we are the host of the wall. Excited about that.
And my name is John Perry, and I am the chairperson for the Wall That Heals Huntsville.
Why is it important to remember the Vietnam War and what happened?
Oh, okay, that's a good question. I have some 560 people in my chapter, and I would say that 70% of those guys suffers from some element of the war, and primarily PTSD. So this chapter is going to bring closure to some of that. They're going to be able to put their finger on guys that they served with, guys that were killed, wounded, etc. So that's going to bring closure to that, and that's why it's important to us.
A lot of things that we're doing as far as bringing the wall to town is all about healing, and I don't know if the other gentleman mentioned healing. I'm a member of the VVA, the Vietnam Veterans of America. I'm also a member of some other organizations in town. And the people that I'm with are my era people. You know, they're the ones who are the Vietnam veterans. I know what the health problems are with Agent Orange and PTSD. I've had several times when I've been talking to people where the PTSD comes out in the way of anger. I know there's pent-up hostilities. The only way to get that out is by having something like an event like the wall come to town where they can get together with their comrades, you know, spend time with their comrades. And PTSD, and I'm not saying I'm an expert on it, but PTSD, one of the ways that heals is to talk about it. Get it out and talk about it. And this is how we can bring those guys together. They have common experiences. They can talk about it. And hopefully the healing will begin. And that's what we want, or continue, I shouldn't say begin. Hopefully it will continue.
And to have that conversation, not just important for veterans and folks who were part of that, but also for people, younger generations, who have no connection to it. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's an educational process. When we formed our chapter, that was one of the key things that we wanted to do, is to educate young people of what we've done in Vietnam. And the reason why we're there, you know, some people have a misconception of why we were there. So that we lost the war, perhaps, but we didn't lose the war. We won the war, and we are Americans, and we will go back again if we have to. So that's an educational process that we want to teach our young people.
I was talking to Medal of Honor recipient Mike Rose a month or two ago, and Mike was very articulate in saying, this is an opportunity for us as Vietnam veterans to bridge that gap with our fellow veterans from Afghanistan, Iraq, and all the newer wars. We can more or less say at our ripe old age that we've been there, and not just the war, but we've been through the PSD. We fought all the demons and everything else, and we can share that with the younger generation that they can do it too. If we can do it, they can do it. And that's our bond, our bridge to the younger generation.
Maybe you both can speak to one or two of the lessons that this country hopefully learned or maybe should have learned from the war that maybe has been forgotten.
Absolutely. One of the things our country could learn from that war in Vietnam is that when you send soldiers and deploy them to a mission, our country should support the soldiers 100%. And I say soldiers because I'm retired Army, but I'm talking about a military force. Support them 100% until we get the job done.
I ran into a gentleman, a Vietnam veteran. He had his hat on at the restaurant the other day, and I walked up to him and congratulated him on his military service. And he came back to me and almost tears in his eyes because we were talking about the wall and everything else. And his wife was joining us in a conversation, and she said he would not wear his Vietnam hat. You know, for the longest time, he wouldn't talk about his experience or anything. And then she said, because she was a VA nurse during that time, she said, I started wearing that hat and I started getting positive comments. And then he took the hat back and now he won't take it off because people go around and they congratulate him and tell him what a great job and thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm. One thing both of you touched on is an issue we've been covering at Huntsville Public Radio over the past several months as we've been exploring issues related to mental health awareness. How has the issue of mental health care for veterans evolved since the Vietnam War to now? Has it changed? Has it gotten better? How does that stand?
I truly believe that the awareness from this war will help the mental issue cases. I'm actually heading up the emotional support team, group of guys that are going to deal with PTSD, mental issue, instability, and things like that. And all they want to do is hear, let someone listen to them. That has not changed, except that we need to listen to people that are not 100%, for the lack of a better word.
And how does that help?
They're just being listened to and refer them to other people. Veterans, in our chapter, every meeting we have two veterans that tell a story about Vietnam. And mental cases is sometimes has to do with things that they've done in Vietnam that they can't get over. And it just drives them, you know, up the wall, if you will. So we have people tell a story so that other people in the chapter will hear the story and they'll know that they're not alone.
I was listening to, I forgot, it was a program or a newscast, and they were talking about PTSD, and he said, there is no disorder to PTSD, it's just PTS, post-traumatic stress, and it's a result of war. And after the Vietnam War, PTSD was kind of one of those foggy, I don't know if they called it PTSD back after the war, it was you know, just something you had a problem, and they kind of pushed it to the background. I think we have come a long way, especially with our new veterans, the Iraqi vets and the Afghan vets, because of what we learn. Because my son is an Afghan vet, okay? When he came back, he had a touch of PTSD. What I learned from all the different mental health things and everything was you need to let that individual talk about his experience, and the more he talks about it, the better it's going to become. So from my experience, I learned how to handle his PTSD. So I should call it PTS. Mm-hmm. But it's not a disorder. It's a result of war, and we all have to recognize that.
And it's just a matter of caring. I just thinking back to one of the things that we do a prison ministry. And as a result, and we go during Veterans Week, And we go in with our attire on, a Vietnam attire. And what we've actually had accomplished is that the warden have built a barracks for their prison that are veterans as a result of us going there. So now we recognize even people in prison that have had PTSD, mm-hmm. we recognize them. So they're getting the help that they need because they mm-hmm. hear guys on the outside saying that, well, I had the same problem, you know. And so now all you got to do now in here is straighten up and listen to other guys so when you get out of prison, you can be a productive citizen.
And that's one thing that we've heard across the spectrum when people are dealing with mental health is it affects so many other areas of not just their life, but it's like ripple effects. It goes out, affects families and friends and neighbors and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So do you think that it's been getting better for veterans since the Vietnam War? Or
I think it's been getting better. I truly do. One of the things we pride ourselves in our chapter is that we've had a number of Vietnam veterans to pass away because we all in our golden years. But what we have not done is forgotten the spouses of those veterans. So they need help as well. And that's one thing we pride ourselves in. Mm-hmm. We take care of them. We call them up occasionally, invite them to different things. He says, hey, Johnny will be happy that you came to support our event. Of course, they give a little money and help our cause, but that's good too, you know.
Yeah, if I can add, right after 9/11, my American Legion, I'm part of the Madison American Legion, Vietnam veterans were the president and the vice president, et cetera. And basically our mantra was, we are not going to let what happened to us happen to these young veterans. So we went out and we did a whole bunch of things, you know, yellow ribbon ceremonies. We did Blue Star Banner events to make sure that the families and the community knew that we really appreciate these young kids going to war and being, you know, making that major sacrifice. And when they came back, we made sure that they were welcomed back as heroes. And I think we had positive results. I think the community in general is very positive toward our veterans. I'm glad to see that. You know, after all, when they go off to war, they're gone for a year, they don't know if they're coming back. You know, so I'm proud of what we've done.
That was John Perry and Charlie Miller, two of the local veterans who helped organize the presentation of The Wall That Heals here in Huntsville back in November. Tonight on the Public Radio Hour, we're replaying some of the best moments of our year-long coverage of mental health awareness issues in our community. To learn more about the mental health challenges our veterans face, we went to the Huntsville International Airport.
The Huntsville International Airport.
And met with Steve Mosian, a member of the Semper Fi Community Task Force, which every year hosts Heroes Week as a way to give back to those who have given us so much.
Our focus is not just current veterans of current wars, but it's the youth also. In Heroes Week as an event where we bring in veterans that are wounded, we also try to mix in a Vietnam veteran or two into the mix because it's really good for someone who is having an issue to understand that it's the same stuff, just a different war. You know, others have gone through it and others have found their way through the fog.
We've done some coverage of the Wall That Heals that was in town last weekend, and that's an issue that came up time and time again, being able to connect veterans who have a shared experience, how helpful that is.
Yes, and it's very helpful if you're doing it within the same generation, but what we have found is it's actually very helpful if you're doing it cross-generationally. You have Vietnam veterans with the Iraq War veterans. And they find out that, oh, look, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years ago, people went through the same things. So it's not, the individual suffering does not think that they are unique and going through this problem by themselves, that others have it and others go through it.
And you say it's especially helpful to have that cross-generational connection there. Why do you think it is helpful to have the different age groups talk about this? You kind of touched on that.
Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and you know, when I came back, I put things in the proverbial little shoebox and stuck them away in the back of my brain and never opened that box up. years and years and years later, I opened that box up, and I had a problem. I had a little issue, and I sought help talking to those that had gone through the same kinds of things I went through. And what we have found is that if I talk to a Korean War veteran or a World War II veteran, not too many of them left anymore, but I have spoken with them, I find out that they had the same problems. They had the same feelings. And the fact that they managed to work their way through them showed me a path to work my way through it. It was, if he can do it, I can do it, you know. I'm not alone. Others have it. And in fact, you know, what we call PTSD today, it was just called different things in different wars. It, the same issues. People that came back from combat zones had the same issues. It was just called different things.
Do you feel comfortable sharing? You mentioned the shoebox. Do you feel comfortable sharing the issue that you discovered and had to work through?
Well, I had to work my way through a night that happened on top of a hill and during an attack and the death of some people that I had put into a certain position. And I felt tremendous guilt from that. At the time, I was focused on the tree in front of me and not the forest, if that makes sense.
It does.
Afterwards, looking back on it, that's when I started to have a problem about it. And it was a guilt problem, you know, pure and simple. It was guilt. It was survivor's guilt in a way, but it was also guilt that I had put them in that position. And I had to talk to some folks about that, but, you know, I wasn't going to talk to someone who just read things in a book. I needed to talk to another veteran who had been in combat, because he's the only one who would really understand the kind of guilt that you feel.
Were you surprised to discover that it helped to talk to someone who had that shared experience? How did you come to the realization that's what you needed to do?
Well, I believe, you know, veterans like to talk to veterans, okay? We really do. And we talk to each other differently than we talk to non-veterans, especially combat veterans talking to combat veterans. And I talked to some friends, and that's what they suggested because it had worked for them. So I said, okay, and let's talk, you know. So it's sort of word-of-mouth referral to get the help, and it works. It works.
Over the past several months, we've been exploring a number of issues related to mental health awareness throughout our community, and you've touched on some of those during our conversation here. Could you speak a little bit to the unique challenges that veterans face as they come back and try to reintegrate into civilian life?
Well, I can. I can't speak much about the treatment for it, but it is difficult when you are working in a combat zone. The intensity is greater than anything you'll experience in this country. You trust the person next to you with your life, and you get in that mode that you're all in it together, and you trust, you fight for him and he fights for you. And sometimes when you come back into the civilian world, you find out, oh, it's not like that. And that can be very difficult to adjust to. It can be very difficult to find out that this fellow that you think was your friend down the hall is really gunning for your job, okay? And he doesn't care what it does to you.
It's a competitive environment versus camaraderie.
That's a great way to put it. Great way to put it. In the military, it's team. And you know, when I said you fight for the guy next to you, and he fights for you. It's not like that when you come back and go into the civilian world. So that's one aspect where it's different. It's also different because sometimes you can't talk to people about what it is you experienced. You don't want to talk to people about it. It can become very private, and it can become very debilitating if you keep it all inside. So there are, if you work at a facility and nobody's ever been in combat, you can't talk to them about it because they won't understand.
And this is a very special weekend in military history as we remember the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I this Sunday, November 11th. Steve, why is it important to remember moments in history like this? We had the Wall That Heals in town last weekend, and this weekend another big moment. Why is it important to remember?
Well, the saying is that those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it. And if you know the history of World War I, in fact, it was virtually repeated in World War II. And while the Korean War wasn't a repeat of that, it was the same type ideologies that fostered that one, and the same type of ideologies that fostered Vietnam, and the same type of ideologies that fostered what's going on in the Middle East. So it's important to understand historically, what causes war and what type ideologies you need to be aware of and watching before the war starts.
That was Steve Mosian, a member of the Semper Fi Community Task Force, which each year hosts Heroes Week as a way to thank and honor veterans who have made sacrifices during their service. Steve talked to us about mental health challenges veterans face, among other things. Tonight on the Public Radio Hour, we're reviewing some of the best interviews and stories we gathered during our year-long exploration of mental health awareness in our community. Our volunteer community newsroom played a big role in that coverage, and that includes Kathy Main, who took our public microphone to a mental health public forum at the Huntsville-Madison County Public Library back in September. Here's a couple of the stories that she gathered.
My name is Jeremy Blair. I'm with the CEO of Wellstone. And the purpose for tonight is to really educate the community members on the importance of mental health treatment, the available resources here in Madison County, and really try to help folks access care that they need. We talk about that suicide is the second leading cause of death for kids ages 10 all the way to adults age 34. And so we want to make sure that we have the resources that are available to them so that we can stem that tide and really concentrate. We've concentrated heavily on our school-based mental health services. And so we've placed 30 to 40 therapists in over 50 schools in all three school districts to make them available to the students. So we serve close to 2,000 students a year in those three school systems. So we're wanting to make sure that the kids have access, obviously. So we're reducing the barriers for parents so they're not having to take off work to bring the kids to the clinic. We're trying to make sure that we do everything possible so that kids and adults can get mental health treatment when they need it.
What would be the first steps that a family would take in order to access your services? Or, they have cry for help.
So first thing is call our Access to Care line. They could dial 256-533-1970, and we'll get them connected to our resources there, get them registered for services, and that really begins them getting an assessment, having them assigned to a therapist, making sure that they get the care that they need.
You mentioned the three different school systems. What are those?
Madison City, Huntsville City, and Madison County. We're also in Limestone County, then, of course, Coleman County and Coleman City.
What is your primary source of funding?
So we get a little bit of state funding. We get some city funding. But really the bulk of our revenue comes from billing insurance, is billing Medicaid, all kids, Blue Cross Blue Shield. So that's really part of the misconception is we're fully funded. We have to earn our revenue just like any healthcare provider. And so that's really becomes the hard part for us when reimbursement rates are so low.
Talk to me about affordability.
So for us, our services are on a sliding fee scale. And so if you don't have insurance, then we try to work with you based on your income. But we also recognize that healthcare is becoming more and more less affordable for a lot of people. And so we don't want that to be a barrier for people getting treatment, but we also recognize that the reality is for many that it is.
My name is Laura Hall. I represent House District 19 in the state of Alabama. The issue of mental health is important to me, one, because of the number of parents that I've had conversations with who are concerned about their child and the lack of access or not receiving what they feel would be the correct approach to dealing with their child's problem as it relates to mental health. Beyond that, it's a personal issue for me. I have a sister who's been diagnosed with schizophrenia, paranoid, and at the time of her diagnosis, I don't think my family and I realized exactly how to deal with it. We knew there was a problem. They knew there was a problem, but it seemed in many cases I think we may have enabled her problem. And so today she is an individual who is not able to function and live by herself, and that is not the case with individuals that get the right type of services with mental illness, that they can be productive citizens and live and have a productive life.
How would constituents in Madison County and in North Alabama find resources?
Oh, I think there are several ways that they may find resources, and one is through Wellstone, which used to be known as the Huntsville-Madison County Mental Health Center. There is also an organization called Mental Health Coalition, and I think that those two are probably the ones that I'm most familiar with or receive the type of information and materials that I've needed to help individuals who are seeking access to services.
Those were a couple of the voices and stories gathered during a mental health public forum at the Huntsville-Madison County Public Library back in September. Thanks to Community Newsroom producer Kathy Main for doing that. Throughout 2018 on the Public Radio Hour, we explored stories, interviews, and features related to mental health awareness issues in our community. That also includes a new nonprofit aimed at raising mental health awareness called Little Orange Fish, founded by Daniel Adamek. Back in the fall, Little Orange Fish hosted an event called Expressions in Laughter. Daniel sat down with WLRH's Katie Gannaway to talk about the event and the mission of Little Orange Fish.
I started the organization 5 years ago because I had my own struggles navigating the mental health care system here in North Alabama. And the Little Orange Fish mission really is focused on helping the public understand what their needs are and how to get access to the resources to address those needs.
So how does Little Orange Fish get involved with the public fulfilling their mission?
Education outreach, that being the primary focus of Little Orange Fish. Work with teachers, law enforcement, business leaders to help them educate themselves and those they work with and interface with on recognizing signs and symptoms of mental illness and emotional distress, and understand how to advocate for themselves and how to find professionals who can best help them understand their issues better and get the treatments that they need.
Your group has a partnership with Wellstone Behavioral Services, is that correct?
Currently, no active engagements, but we have provided in the past and will in the future mental health first aid, which is a program geared towards the general public on that very issue of recognizing the signs and symptoms of mental illness and what to do.
Are you partnered with any other mental health services right now?
So we are a partner on the SPEAK effort through Huntsville Hospital Foundation, working with the North Alabama Mental Health Coalition, which is largely geared towards helping those with serious mental illness, helping them access the necessary resources, which we are severely lacking in North Alabama and Alabama in general. How to change that is a big focus of that effort, is really understanding what the shortcomings are and what we need to do to get policy changes in place and get the public behind it.
What would you say is the exact role that SPEAK plays along with Little Orange Fish in your mission?
So the SPEAK effort is focused almost exclusively on suicide prevention and intervention. And that is a Huntsville Hospital Foundation guided effort. And in that, it really is getting in to speak with teachers and students about recognizing the signs and symptoms of all the things that lead to more catastrophic outcomes. So there have been many events throughout the past 2 years that effort has been going, interfacing, like I said, with teachers, with parents, with practitioners. I had an event earlier this year where we met with over 70 primary care physicians. And so that is the, you know, working with different stakeholders around that specific topic being suicide prevention and intervention.
How would you say that these sorts of events and, you know, your group alone, how would you say that that helps defeat sort of misconceptions about mental illness and things among people who want to know more?
Well, there is still this prevailing perception that mental health and physical health are different things. And we know that that is absolutely false from a physiological and medical perspective now. Getting past that is the biggest misconception. And associated, closely related to that, is the idea of stigma. You know, people not seeing any kind of emotional distress or mental illness as a weakness of some sort. And we know that that's just not the case.
And how do you combat that sort of thinking? How do you combat people who say something like, you know, mental illness is not like breaking a bone, you know, it's like just something that you can fix like that?
First of all, I think we are making progress on that front. People are recognizing that
in North Alabama
and globally. While there are several things that are not progressing as quickly as I would like to see, and the understanding that mental illness is something, or even emotional distress, and I try to make that distinction. I mean, all of us deal with emotional distress. And the idea that we should be able to address those issues on our own without asking for help is really a ridiculous one. And we are starting to see a change in culture where people are more willingly reaching out for assistance about these issues, because it is, when you have a traumatic event, an emotionally traumatic event, it is just like breaking a bone. I mean, there is damage that is done, and if you don't attend to it with the appropriate treatment, it's going to leave permanent damage. It is a direct analog of, you know, breaking a leg bone.
Right. Now, you are having an event, and that is called Feelings Are Real Expressions in Laughter. Can you tell us a little bit about who is going to be there and what is going to be there?
This is the third in the expression series that we've done. Started last year with Expressions in Art was the first event we had. Then Expressions in Music, and this being Expressions in Laughter. And really, the objectives are twofold. One is to bring awareness to mental health issues. The secondary mission is to bring together community. In this case, we're using laughter to get there. It's actually a mixed event. We'll have three extraordinary musicians, artists performing, opening with Victoria Jones. I have Alan Little, who is the founder and director of Listen Local, who will be emceeing and doing his own performing. And then Jordan Lamont Landers will be closing the musical. We have Mike James as comedian coming down. He'll be performing in between Victoria and Lamont. And he is a Nashville-based comedian that I'm really excited about.
Can you tell me how laughter fits in with this whole entire theme? Like, what do you think laughter brings to this event?
It's a tough question. So the expression series is really about recognizing that emotions and feelings are real.
That's the title of the event.
That's right. It's really the subtitle of the mission of the organization, is to bring about that recognition that feelings, that emotional aspect of who we are, is just as tangible, just as real as the physical aspect, as you mentioned before, you know, emotional trauma versus a broken arm. They really are just as impactful and just as important. And I would say, you know, from the emotional perspective, that is the driver for everything that we are. So
it's sort of like a communal thing where you have, you know, the first one you said was art, then you had song, and now you have laughter, and all three of those things can bring people together. So that's what I'm getting.
And they're about expression. They're about putting yourself out there, getting these artists to show who they are. That is the nature of art, is the vulnerability and expression of self. So that's the most important message, really, of Little Orange Fish, is to say that, you know, we are emotional, and our mental health and our emotional health is central to who we are.
So is it safe to presume that next year you will have another Expressions installment in your Expressions series?
We will. We might start back at the beginning again. Probably music is going to be central to all of the events from this point on.
Do you have anything else that you would like to add today, Daniel?
I encourage everybody to go to littleorangefish.org and look around and give me feedback. Anything you send to info@littleorangefish.org will get to me directly. And engaging the community is what the mission is all about. And so getting feedback is critical to that mission.
That was WLRH's Katie Gannaway talking with Daniel Adamek of Little Orange Fish. Find out more information about Little Orange Fish at littleorangefish.org. In our final segment of the Public Radio Hour, we'll replay one of the most touching stories we heard in 2018, which aired as part of a three-part interview series on suicide awareness produced by WLRH's Jenny Kennedy. Jenny sat down with Wendy Galloway to hear the story of Wendy's son, Aaron Alexander.
Well, I love to talk about my son, Aaron Alexander. He was 19 years old. He had just started his military career in the Army National Guard, and he was smart and funny, and he loved his family and his country. He loved the military history. He also, over the years, had gone back and forth with depression. There was never an official diagnosis of that, but there were extreme moods. And after we had moved to Alabama from Colorado, he was actually doing really well. And, I mean, he was over the moon to be a part of the military and was very excited. He graduated from Fort Benning Basic Training in March of 2016. And when he got home, you know, he was great. Everything was great. And he really started struggling with what to do as far as going active, going to school. I think there were some things that were happening with friends. There was some stuff that happened with his father. And on July 10th, 2016, he took his life. He died by suicide. And it's been hard ever since.
But you're very brave to keep speaking about it.
I want to talk about my son. I'm not ashamed of him. You know, his life is what mattered, and I'm very proud of him. And I want people to know his story and to know who he was. And I do talk about how he died and about suicide because I want people to talk about it. And one of the things I see, and that, you know, even my son had done, there were times that he would say that he wanted to kill himself. And it had gotten to the point where I didn't really take it serious because it would be in one of his extreme moods that he was upset. You know, it's a very off-the-cuff comment. And the more I've thought about it, it's like, we really do need to think about what we're saying and how we say it and be aware of our conversations. And Aaron also would say, he would also say, Mom, I would never do it, though, because of you and my family.
And why would you not believe him?
Right. So, you know, there were a lot of factors. And so it wasn't the typical stereotypes that you hear in the suicide list of, you know, this is kind of the basics of what happened. So every situation is different. But, you know, it's just so important that we talk about it and reach out to people. And, you know, that's one of the things that's happened. I've had a couple people come to me and say, you know, they're saying this, and I'm like, you have to take it serious. I didn't. And the result is my son is gone. So we have to take it serious on the side of the person that's hearing it. But then it also really needs to start being conveyed to the kids that are saying it, that I don't know how to describe it in terms of, you know, making sure that they understand how serious it is mm-hmm. when they say that. And because if you keep saying it and keep saying it, people don't, they stop listening.
Right,
and
it's
they
a crime
don't
wolf.
Take, right. Mm-hmm. And then something really happens and it's too late. So.
And there's not a formula, there's not a path that we all can follow to go, oh, I should have done this, and I'll do this, this, and this, and everything will be fine. We're sort of in the dark,
right.
always.
Well, and, you know, for a long time, some of the things I did do, and then there were things that I was trying to back off of because he was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he
right.
was 19, he was a soldier, he could get called overseas, mm-hmm. and you're going around trying to do the best that you can. And then, of course, you know, if something like this happens, you look back and there's all these scenarios of what you could have done mm-hmm. or should have done. And, I mean, I do bear responsibility and, you know, I always will. And it's not a guilt thing or feeling sorry for myself. You know, I had a responsibility to my son and it was a thing of I started thinking I just have to, you know, let him find his way.
Well, any parent would do that, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in the years following, what has helped you?
The first year I was pretty much in a daze and it was very difficult, but I finally found there is the group through the Crisis Services of North Alabama. Mm-hmm. It is a program that survivors of, you know, suicide, that families that have lost loved ones. We meet twice a month, and it's a group where Connie, of course, runs it, and she's the facilitator, and we're able to talk to other people that share our circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always variations, but we have a general understanding of what happened and, you know, what we're going through. And I've gotten involved with the AFSP. I participated in the Out of the Darkness Walk, mm-hmm. and I will be participating in it again this year in October. There is a movie called Suicide, The Ripple Effect.
Right, I read
about
that.
By Kevin Hines. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal person, and he created this documentary. And I did a showing of that back in April. So I've just started trying to do things to bring more awareness mm-hmm. to suicide, you know, more awareness that people need to talk to each other. I can't get people to talk to me about my son.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
I don't know, because I tell them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I flat out say, I want to talk about my son. Mm-hmm. I want to hear his name. People will never ask me again, how is Aaron doing? That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so painful. So to have people tell me stories about Aaron, or to ask me to tell them a story about Aaron, or, you know, even just like with a movie or something, like he likes Star Wars, mm-hmm. to have somebody say, oh, Aaron would have loved this. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that does that, you know? And so it's really hard because I don't understand. And that's the part that makes me cry a lot, sorry. But I just don't understand why people won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, I don't want to upset you. Well, I live in that every day. You know, what actually makes me feel good is to hear his name, to have somebody say something to me. You know, I was thinking about Aaron today. And my mom will send me texts once in a while saying stuff like that, but it's just really hard to get people to do that because there's just such a stigma, you know, with suicide and how he died. And, you know, that's not what matters about him, though.
Tell me an Aaron story.
He loved the military. He loved military history. He even loved the music. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd play these songs and I'd be like, do I really have to listen to this, honey? But he volunteered at the Veterans Museum. Mm-hmm. He loved the Veterans Museum. He called it his church. And he probably would have volunteered there even more. But he'd go there on Saturdays. I'd take him over there. He had a mentor, Ray, who he just adored. And they got to work on tanks.
Wow.
So he thought that was pretty exciting. You know, but anything to do with the military, he...
Why do you think he was drawn to the military?
You know, I don't know what it was, really, because, I mean, there's some in the family background, but it's not a real dominant, you know, that he grew up with having a lot of family members that, you know, were lifelong mm-hmm. military backgrounds. But I even... have a video of him when he was probably about 6 years old, and he was sitting in his room playing with little army men.
Oh, yeah.
And they asked him about it, and he goes, I'm playing the best game ever, mm-hmm. Army. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's something that he ended up drawn to, and when he fixated on something, mm-hmm. he didn't let it go. Mm-hmm. So... But, you know, he was proud of his country, and
he looked sharp in his uniform.
Yes, he did, very much.
And he was happy with the military. You can't blame the military for what happened to him, can you?
No, he was afraid to say anything, because, you know, there some of the times when he would say things, I would be like, well, if you really feel like this, we need to get help. Mm-hmm, we need mm-hmm. to go and talk to somebody. And, I mean, I distinctly remember him saying, you know, I don't want to mess up my military, Mom. And so, you know, and there is a stigma in the military with, you know, mental health and mm-hmm. getting help. And I know there are programs and different organizations that are working at changing that. Mm-hmm. But it is still something that... You know, you just don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And because even when he was in basic training, he said that, you know, if you got hurt, you just, you know, you suck it up.
Right.
And
my dad was a Marine, so
yeah,
I know.
You definitely, you know. But they even, because, you know, he had a card for the Battle Buddies, because in basic training, he loved his Battle Buddies. Mm. You know, he really bonded with them. I even have a letter from him that he said, Mom, I feel like I really belong. And, you know, because he had trouble through school mm-hmm. with bullying and things like that. But even though, you know, they're handing out these cards and saying, you know, reach out, it's like there's still this unwritten rule that we cannot get people over that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want. I want people over that hump. And
well, people,
you know,
are talking more about PTSD, so let's talk about it pre-PTSD. Let's talk about it now.
Well, and because when PTSD first started being talked about, it was definitely military-related. It was combat, mm-hmm. veterans. From what I see and what I hear now, it's definitely... branched out mm-hmm. in that it's a much broader term mm-hmm. now. People need to get help before it's something.
We need to deal with pre-traumatic stress
right.
disorder rather than post.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, when the veterans, when they're out in the field, they're, you know, we can't even imagine what they're mm-hmm. experiencing, especially in combat. So that's a whole nother thing. But there are people that do join the military that they have things that do need to be dealt with. And we need to get it to where they're okay with asking for that help, mm-hmm. that they're not judged and that they're not put down and that they're not demoted or,
right.
you know, whatever they're afraid of happening mm-hmm. to them, that they do feel a sense of security. Because even if they're having, you know, an emotional problem or something, they sign up to serve our country, and we owe that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in general, too, it's not just the military.
Right.
Mental illness is another stigma, and just can't get people to understand that mental illness is real. It's not, you know, something that somebody's making up.
No, why would you?
I know. But it happens. Mm-hmm. I know I have NAMI's also another organization.
National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Yes. With Rebecca is her name, and she's fantastic as well. Her and I have met and talked about different things that to do to raise awareness for suicide prevention, and she's another really amazing person too. But we just, I don't know, it's always, you know, you deal with it and don't talk about it and move along. And it's just not like that. It doesn't work like that. And I mean, I even had that mindset too. It cost my son his life. I want to change that.
Well, just talking about it, I think, is helpful.
Well, I hope so. You know, I mean, some of it's selfish because I get to talk about him. It's like, I'm going to make you guys listen.
I'm happy to. Well, you know, we said before the interview, our sons are about the same age. They're born about the same time. So, yes, I understand as a mom completely.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, I do have a younger son, and people will still ask me how he's doing. But it's like, Aaron doesn't exist anymore. Well, yes, he does. And he always will, just not in the physical form, but he will always be my son. So I get to talk about him, and I don't want anybody else to have to go through this. The other mothers that I've met that are in this type of situation, it's horrible. And, you know, people shouldn't have to go through this. Suicide is something that we can stop. And things have to be put in place and, you know, protections. And I think it's worth it, you know, because their lives are worth it. So that and letting people know that do feel like that, that they are worth it and we want them here. And, I mean, I wake up every single morning wishing my son was here, and I can't have that anymore. So I just want people to know that do feel that nobody will care if they're here anymore or not. Well, people do care, and it's, you know, for the rest of my life, I have to live with this.
Well, thank you for telling Aaron's story and for sharing your story. Before we go, is there any advice you have to offer someone who's in a position like yours?
Well, if you have lost a loved one to suicide, please talk about it. People don't want to talk about it. It's getting people to go and to be willing to talk, and it is painful, and it's terrible, and it's horrible, and it hurts, and you cry. But talking about it does help. It makes a difference. And you need to tell your loved one's story. They deserve to be heard. Their story deserves to be heard.
That was Wendy Galloway talking with WLRH's Jenny Kennedy as part of a three-part series we aired on suicide awareness. Thanks for tuning in the Public Radio Hour. If you'd like to hear this episode again, just go to our website at WLRH.org and look under programs for the Public Radio Hour.